This is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
On a Thursday, joining me are two friends of mine, Jeff Kenny. Jeff, what's going on?
How are you, Mac? Everything's good.
I'm all right. Actually, I'm a little irritated, man. Hold on.
Surprise.
Before I get irritated, let me introduce Tim Lynch. Tim Lynch joins us. Tim, good morning.
Good morning, Mac. How do you hear you're irritated, buddy?
Yeah, it happens. No, you know what this...
Is this like a rash? Or is this like...
It is kind of like a rash. It's like a mental rash I have. But it's this bullshit over, housing, right? And you're reading that lead paint, black mold, and that, you know, people have been going to... since this shit started with the privatization of housing, people have been going, and they've been told, sorry, this is the way it is. Well, can I speak to the command rep? There is no command rep. Here, you can fill out this form, right? And we'll get to you when we get to you. You know, it's just stupid. And now they're going to get the pat on the head. Now they're going to get a bill of rights from the DOD. All four service secretaries said, we're going to put an end to this, right? You're going to have rights. Right, right. That's what you're going to have. And they've been making billions of dollars off these contracts, too. It's a joke, and if the sad part is, if the people that are demanding that, you know, their health issues get addressed, that their housing issues get addressed, if they think they're going to get treated any different than the people that were made sick by the water at Camp Lejeune, they're crazy. And it pisses me off because it shouldn't take, you know, and the only reason this is going on is because they went on TV. Finally, the spouses said, fuck this. Yeah, we'll burn it down on TV. And everybody saw that theater and went, yeah! And so now, oh, what, in less than 2 weeks, you have a Bill of Rights. It just sickens me. It's bullshit. So that's the source of my rash today.
Yeah, we had that black mold stuff in my house at Camp Lejeune, the last house we had. And not only that, around the same time, housing down there in Florida, you know, for the McDill guys, and also in, I think, either Bragg or Benning. It was real bad, you know, and so it's like, it seems like an endemic.
Yeah, I mean, what the hell? Black mold? Are you kidding me?
I could see him putting that on Jarhead House just to keep us pissed off and, you know, ready to assault beaches and stuff, but it seemed like all the housing in the military has issues, you know?
Yeah.
Hey. Hold on, man. I can brighten your day a little bit, Mac.
Please do.
Oh, did you know that down in Venice Beach, there's a housing co-op started up there in Los Angeles that builds these modular units out of containers, shipping containers, and they're nice. I mean, these things are super nice, and there's two projects that they're already doing in Los Angeles, and it's only costing like $450,000 per unit to put homeless families in these nice containerized housing units that are quite frankly nicer than what most people are living in around there anyway. And that's your tax money. Well, you and Jeff, you're paying, that's your tax money at work. See? I mean, right. When you compare and contrast, I mean, talk about a boondoggle, $450,000 per unit.
I don't care about civilians. I don't care. There's a lot of stuff in my backyard. You want to know what's in your backyard? You want to know what's in your backyard in McAllen, Texas?
That's the front yard.
My backyard.
Yeah, exactly. In your front yard, in your side yard? Yeah, you want to know about that?
No. I know all about that, my friend. I was just trying to bring a little bit of compare and contrast in an effort to raise your flag and spirits on a fine Thursday.
No,
that's all.
No, I mean, come on, how long do we have to do this kind of shit? And like, people would go into the housing office at Lincoln And there's nobody connected with the base. And when you call the base, what they got told was, yeah, we don't handle that. That's a DOD contract with Lincoln. That's like echelons above reality for us. We don't have a dog in that fight. So what do I do? Work with the people at Lincoln. Right? And it reminds me of the Petticoat Junction episode where the guy goes in to the bar and he says, I want to see the sheriff. And Uncle Joe says, hold on. And he bends down behind the bar and he puts on his sheriff badge and he says, I don't want to talk to you. Where's the mayor? And Uncle Joe says, hold on 1 second. And he goes down and he puts his coat on and his hat on and he says, hi, I'm the mayor. Right? It's like that shit. Like, are you fucking kidding me?
And that's Uncle Joe, who was moving kind of slow at that junction.
It was Uncle Joe. You can see him around the bend, whatever the hell the rest of the song was.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just stupid. I mean, and you would think that, after the shit, the water shit, right, that we would say, hey, you know, quality of life stuff. I mean, we've got to pay attention to this stuff, boys and girls. It's serious shit. And again, the only reason it became anything was because those spouses who probably for years and years and years said, well, I can't really do that because I don't want to get my husband's career jacked up, finally said, right, fuck this, I'll go on TV.
Right. That's it's, well, you know, I think a lot of it is people who are supposed to check on that stuff are government employees. And they're like, they can't be fired. They can't, you know, once you get a GS employee whose job is to oversee, you know, things like that, and he just doesn't, I mean, I'm not saying they're bribed by the companies. I just have no knowledge of that. But I know that it's an issue. That's the same issue that the VA was having for years and years and probably still are to a certain extent. I mean, I have to tell you, since the president got elected, my VA is a lot better. I don't know how Tim feels about it.
When you say your VA, what do you mean?
Well, like, for instance, now they call me for appointments. They say, Mr. Kennedy, it's about time you, like, for instance, I got one today at 14:30, and they're like, check in constantly. You know, are you aware of this? Did you forget, you dizzy bastard? You know, are you ready? And you know, it wasn't like that up until after January of 2017. It's been getting more and more, you know, more responsive. Now, I don't have any particular problems, so I can't really go into it. I'm just saying the indicators are that I don't have to reach out to them so much. And if I do, they get back to me. And it's the same thing because people bitched. They bitched so loud that finally somebody wearing a uniform or somebody in DOD who's like a SES or whatever said, hey, you know, this housing thing, we're poisoning these people, the water at Lejeune and Quantico and the mold and the stuff like that, you know, and the different bases. So somebody's finally doing something.
Well, and then in the staff meeting, right, as they're in the behind closed doors, it's like, yeah, but we don't give a shit about that. We deny it's our responsibility. So, like, what's the big deal? And then the PAO says, they went on TV. What? How dare they?
Yeah.
How dare those bitches? They went on TV. What the fuck? Right? How? This is unbelievable. Oh, shit. Kristen Gillibrand. And who they go on TV with? Senate Armed Service Committee. Oh, and Gillibrand's running for president. This is not going to be good for us. Shit.
Yeah.
We're all going on the bus now. That's, I mean, come on. That's just.
Yeah, I think General Miller has more nightmares over Kristen Gillibrand than he did over, Zarqawi in the Anbar province.
ISIS, Zarqawi. Yeah, no shit, man. No shit.
Well, you know what's going to happen is they're going to start to throw money at it, and they're going to throw money at it through a contracting mechanism. And if you start, and that's where everything goes pear-shaped, because the contractor is going to say, hey, we're doing exactly what the contract told us to do, because they never write the damn contract to do what it is they want done. That's an art in and of itself. There's businesses that do nothing but try to unscrew your contract so that it says what it, you know, you're getting what you want to get. People don't articulate that well in these contracts, and that's where, but they're throwing money at it, and that's what everybody will say. Hey, we're throwing money at it, and the contractor will be trying to do what he can do, and who the hell knows? I mean, when you start looking at the contracting mechanism that the DOD uses, that's a shit show in and of itself.
Oh my God. Yeah. Tell me about it. Hold on. This is what the Bill of Rights, right? The tenants are going to now have these rights. Safe and healthy homes and communities with working fixtures, appliances and utilities, and well-maintained common areas. That's now going to be in the Bill of Rights.
Right.
Was it not in the contract before?
It's probably just
I never had that problem with base housing. I mean, every time I moved into base housing, everything worked. I don't recall it being that horrible.
Yeah, all my stuff worked. The only thing we had was that mold. You know, it was like kind of gross, you know what I mean? But
that's the only thing. Other than that, it was great. A housing advocate. But again, remember, right? We're all officers.
Right.
Right? And the housing changed fundamentally after about, what, 2005? When all these asshole politicians kept going to memorial services and funerals in their district, and then they'd go down to visit, and they'd see this shit, and they'd say, what is that? What kind of house? What are those buildings for? Oh, that's Lance Corporal housing. That's where we're going to see the widow of Lance Corporal so and so. People actually live in those places. That's why all the barracks had got done at Pendleton. They started going to the hospital. That's why we got a new hospital at Pendleton, because they were going to that old fucking hospital, and they're like, "What is this shit? Oh, this is our hospital." Well, everybody else has much nicer facilities, and we're coming here all the time. Yeah, that's right. Welcome to Marine Corps. Okay, maybe we should build a new one. It's just,
yeah.
I don't know, man. I remember walking to school in the 60s, you know, on Quantico, and most of the enlisted housing were trailers. And they weren't exactly big trailers either.
remember Ron Johnson, General Johnson, his dad was a sergeant, and they lived in Midway Park, which is just outside the front gate. And it was nothing but shacks. And it was still nothing but shacks in the 80s and early 90s. And then they did, I think what you said, Mac, is actually before that, they changed it over, and the housing there's pretty nice. But
right now it is.
You know, right, yeah. But, man, it was like, you know, it was and his dad used to walk to Mainside. His dad was an admin sergeant. He would walk in his Charlie's all the way to Mainside. It's like 5 miles, man. And I'm like, didn't people pick you up? Well, there wasn't that many. Only officers had cars, and no, they didn't.
Oh, okay, now hold on. Number two, a housing advocate designated by the installation chain of command to be their advocate to the landlord. Oh, that was like, so there was no, see what I mean? This is the whole Pontius Pilate. That's a DOD contract. We don't have any say in it anymore. None? Zero? Yeah, sorry. You're screwed on this deal. Who negotiated that shit, man?
No. The contractor will negotiate a liaison officer. That's big money right there. Are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. Then they'll have a liaison office. They'll be negotiating that stuff into the contract because they're going to have to pay the staff it. You wait and see. That thing will turn into a liaison corporation, and shit will get nice once the money starts flowing. That's all it takes.
Exactly. And again, the whole thing will be, we have to find a way to vent this steam in order to not cost ourselves money. It's not going to be to make it effective and fix shit. It's going to be to, in order to make sure that we don't cost ourselves and compromise ourselves financially. Effective methods of two-way communications with the landlord and the maintenance staff with honest and responsive communications from those staff. That means we have an integrity issue?
Or you could just pay people in the military more and not have any housing.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh, we don't want to do that.
Then it would be free market.
Remember, this whole move to privatization of housing was done in order to save money, right?
And so, well, that failed.
Yeah.
That's hysterical.
Let's get the DOD out of this business. Right? We'll outsource it. Everybody's outsourcing everything. We don't need these staffs to upkeep our housing. We'll bring in these other companies and they'll do it. And then I was just in Quantico, I don't know, a couple months ago, and a buddy of my son's, right? They're all captains living in new housing. So you drive in the main gate in Quantico and maybe. It's between the high school and the main gate on the right hand side, right? So it's new housing. So he says, yeah, he put up his Dodger flag during the playoffs, right?
Right.
And he gets a letter from Lincoln Housing. Take the Dodger flag down. It's unauthorized. And his response was, stick it up your ass, man. The Dodger flag flies. All right? And don't send me another piece of correspondence until you fix the shower.
Yeah, right.
Right. That kind of chicken shit.
You know, our shower sucks, too. I'm going to put up a Dodger flag here.
There you go. Prompt professional repairs. If life, health, and safety repairs are not finished within 30 days, the resident will be offered a no-cost move into an alternative residence on the installation or in the civilian community.
Yeah.
Right. Good one. I didn't know this was supposed to be funny. A process for dispute resolution, mediation, and arbitration. A decision in favor of the resident will include a determination of any reduction in rent. That's owed by the landlord to be paid to the resident. What about if you're afraid for your kids and your wife, so you have to send them someplace else? Who pays for that? See, and the other thing they wanted was the ability to shut rent payments off. Notice that did not appear in this. No reprisal. This is a stipulation. No reprisal if the residents engage government housing staff or the installation chain of command regarding housing issues.
Right.
What, we have vigilantes? Like, get them, shut their power off intermittently. The bastards ratted us out.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, most of the housing employees seem pretty nice. Like, when we were, you know, they're nice to me anyway, but it's the wives that deal with this.
You got part of your brain missing. Why does anybody want to be mean to you?
Yeah, but I mean, although I have a button that says that, people can read, but sometimes I forget it because, again, refer to the brain, part of the brain being missing thing. No, I'm saying it's usually the wives who got to deal with these folks because we're off doing shit.
Right. No, that's right. And the wives are screwed because does anybody want their wife to be the wife that's going out in public and being the troublemaker?
Right.
No, look, it's not the black bowl's not that bad. So yeah, what if he's got to breathe? You know,
it's like, haven't you ever had mold on your toast? You just scrape it off with a butter knife.
Yeah, cut that corner off, or put a little bit more butter. Yeah, you know, and that's how this is. But again, this shit. Now, there's water contamination reported in Colorado Springs, and let me tell you, that shit's everywhere.
Yeah,
that shit's everywhere. And there was a hearing yesterday in which, you know, DOD got asked, "You've known about this forever. Why haven't you done more?" Candy Graham, no comment.
Yeah.
Like, well, I mean, fuck. And again, I just read the story. The Secretary of Navy, Navy to deny all civilian claims related to Camp Lejeune water contamination. We are denying the claims to free everybody to take their own course of action. So the Navy poisons everybody. They knew about it. They didn't do shit to clean it up or warn people. And now they're saying, sorry, we're out. Like, who does that kind of shit? I think it's one of the most, it's one of the most horrible episodes. When you make people sick and you don't do anything right to help them.
Right.
I don't know. It's just,
I smell lawyers, man. I smell lawyers.
I know. And then does that get better? Does that make anybody whole? I'll answer that for you.
Lawyers get more whole. They all get paid one way, no matter what happens.
Right. No, it's just, and again, the only reason they're responding at all is because that shit got on TV. Otherwise, we wouldn't even be talking about it. And in spite of people going and banging on their doors and banging on their doors and banging on their doors for close to a decade, I got sent a series of stories that have been done over the course of the last decade that tell the same shit. And they just ignore it. So anyway. All right. ICE is dwindling in just across the border. At Al Qaim, right?
Okay.
And so I wanted to ask you, so Jeff, do you have any idea? Do you have any sense, not an idea, do you have any idea that they're there because that was the staging area? That's like Marine Corps Base, you know, Albany or Barstow, just across the border on the north or the east side.
I do not. I have to tell you, the big worry over there is, I think the most likely worry now is the fact that the Shia militia groups are infiltrated all the way through areas that used to be exclusively Sunni, all over Anbar. And that's a concern. You know, that's a concern. Some of them are Shia, Iraqi Shia. Some of them are no shit Iranian Shia. And, I hate to say this because all the time we spent there, but, I mean, things just don't look good for the future there. And it has nothing to do with ISIS. You know, the only way ISIS would probably, I think, become a factor again is that they ally with Sunnis who are fighting, you know, the Shia, the Shia presence in places they'd never been before. And that's total conjecture. I'm not getting that from any, any kind of classified stuff or anything like that.
Well, they don't have any choice, though, do they? I mean, what choices do they have? I mean, if they don't throw in there, where do they throw in? Where do they go? What do they do?
Well, the government in Iraq could be fair, and then the elections in the Anbar province and other Sunni places just be, let them pick their own local leaders. And
I know, but really, are we going to go there? If they're like, what's next? We're going to have George Washington in Iraq?
I mean, well, who cares, really? It's their business.
Well, no, that's not wrong. But again, it's like, when you would come home and people would say, do you think that they'll, will they be able to become a democracy? And you're like, okay, look, they don't even know who Thomas Jefferson is. And the whole concept of minority rights, do you realize how novel that is on the planet? While the majority rules, and in the rest of the world, the minority cowers in the corner and doesn't make a noise, because if you do, you'll get a bullet in your head.
Right.
And now we're going to have an election, and women are going to be involved. And how about the women in Afghanistan saying, hold the phones, all right? Right, we're not going to throw the burqas back on.
Right.
Tell them.
Yeah, it's like, again... You know, sooner or later, they got to handle it themselves. You know, and as a matter of fact, the more we get involved, the worse it is. Usually the government, when they get into something to try and solve a problem, they make it worse. They make it different and worse. And, the other thing is, us being around there trying to tell them what's what causes resentment in itself. It's sometimes the only unifying factor, in the issues that are going on in some of these places like Iraq and Afghanistan. The fact that the outsider who comes in, makes himself unpleasant to both, and I think it's inevitable. If you're in somebody else's country, tell them what's what, they're going to get resentful.
Amazing. No, who was that? There was that woman who called out the national media for being, 99% liberal and not willing to admit that they are,
Laura Logan.
Laura Logan, right.
Right.
So, which is pretty stunning. But one of the things she talked about was what we did, she said, not only was the invasion wrong, but then once we did it, under Barack Obama, we just unasked it and we left everybody that came to support us, everybody, all the media, all the, women's groups. When we walked away from that, we hung every one of them out to dry.
And she said, that's oversimplification.
But let me finish her point. Her point was, so going there was wrong. The way we left was even worse than going there in the first place. Yeah. So anyway, go ahead.
Well, I think that, the truth is, when ISIS totally Sunni,
right?
Totally Sunni. So when they blew into Anbar province and the other Sunni areas of Iraq, the Sunnis they didn't like the fact that they've been dominated since we overthrew Saddam by Shia, and so consequently, I don't think there's too much. Basically, the ISIS came in like water, all the way almost to past Fallujah and everything like that, all the way to Baghdad. They took Mosul, all the way to where now you're up against determined Shia resistance. And then the Iraqi Sunnis who are, you know, in Anbar, they're like, what did we do? These guys suck.
Right.
And, you know, even though they held, like, they never lost the Haditha Dam or, you know, those positions there. They had, like, little, you know, like, kind of like Bastogne during the Battle of the Bulge. They hung on. And then when they blew through, I mean, once they decided, hey, you know, the Iraqi Sunnis are like, these guys are crazy. They're like Zarqawi again. Right. I mean, that's how we basically started making headway after 2006, because a lot of those tribes in Anbar, like Abu Mahal and Abu Nimr, you know, the Ayyubides, they're like, this fucking Zarqawi guy and his people with him got to go. They're too bad.
Right. And at least, like, we could throw in with the Americans. We know the Americans want to get out of here. These fuckers, they want to stay.
Yeah.
And screw the whole thing up.
And then you get the wrong expression on your face, and they throw you off a building.
Oh my!
I mean, you might as well had Saddam back, you know?
Right. Well, and that's why. You know, go ahead.
Well, the other thing about it, though, with these ISIS guys is I think we need to start thinking like Carthaginian solution for those assholes, and I don't think we're going to. I'm wondering how many we're going to let go back home.
Right.
They're not going to be perceived as being necessarily vanquished weirdos. They're going to be perceived as being conquering heroes.
Yeah.
They survived all the way to the end. And we're stupid enough to do that. You wait and see.
Yeah. Well, like this female who, she got a child about 18 months old from she's American, or she was living in America. It's unclear whether she's a citizen. She actually looks like that Omar, new congresswoman. She's saying, I was born in the United States, so therefore I'm an American citizen, and I rate to come back. This is a person who's, like, actively telling other, you know, Muslims that they should murder Americans and stuff. And so, like Tim says, she knows once she gets back in that community, and then the weirdest communities, these communities exist up in, like, Minnesota and stuff, a bunch of Somali Muslims.
Michigan.
You know, or in Detroit area, you know, the Arab Muslims and stuff. And some of them are patriotic Americans, but some of them aren't. And you don't want to have that, you know, oh, these are the conquering. They went and fought the good fight, you know, like Tim says, that's going to be their rep. And it's already happening in London and France and places like that where these scumbags are rolling back, you know.
How do you roll back into your country? First of all, I thought, didn't they burn all their passports?
I don't know, but apparently they are coming.
They get it through the UN and whatnot. I think the Swedes are actually paying them the money to come back and reintegrate, as if they're going to reintegrate.
What?
It's craziness. Yeah, absolutely. And these are not the guys, I think, that, like I said, not a one of them should walk away. They should finish this, and everybody should, you know, leave on their shield, as it were, to use an old metaphor.
Yeah, you know that's not going to happen.
I know. That's what I'm saying. And so what are you going to do with them?
Hold on. I want you to footnote something. What would be a Carthaginian solution?
Oh, that's
destruction.
Wipe them out to the last guy. It's what the Sri Lankans did to the Tamil Tigers. That's the only way they solved that problem. They killed every last one of them. It was kind of brutal. Because in the Sri Lankan and of course, in the Carthaginian solution, you're talking women, children, old people. Everybody goes.
Well, that would be a Middle Eastern solution, yes?
That would be it.
Have them all surrounded. And I remember John, I think it was John Mayer. He was a CEO of 1-4.
Yeah, he was.
In 2004, got sent to Najaf. And so they fight and they have like Sadr's guys all surrounded in some, and they push them all into a mosque, right?
Right.
So now we have a ceasefire. And the Iraqi soldiers who fought us twice are now on our side, right? With the Iraqi army. And they're like, this is going to be awesome. We have your tanks and helicopters. We're going to go into that mosque. We're going to paint the walls with their blood. We're going to annihilate them. And we're like, you were probably going to talk to them, and it might probably not going to happen like that. And they're like, what? How can you be a great country and not not annihilate your enemies? We don't, the whole mosque thing, the walls running red with blood, that's not going to look good. And they're like, look, you're the infidel. They'll negotiate anything with you. It's not binding. They can do right. anything because right. you are the infidel. And they'll put their weapons down, and they'll walk out, and in 10 minutes they'll have another weapon in, and they'll start doing it again. And we're like, no, you can't do this. And they're like, okay, you don't have to go, but let us use your helicopters and your tanks. Get us in there. We will annihilate all of them. And it's not the American way. The American way is let's continue sideways so we can continue to fight this thing.
Right. Yeah, you're right. I mean,
they could not understand Syria.
Assad's father, Hafez Assad, place called Hama. He just lined up, you know, they had like a rebellion within the city there. He just lined up artillery, just killed everybody. They called the Hama rules. And, that's how he hung on. And, you know, so that does happen. And then you got Sabra and Shatila refugee camps in Beirut around the time Timmy was there, right before the Marines started getting, bombed by these people. There's a massacre, Christian phalangists just massacred all these people in the Shatila and Sabra refugee camps, and you know it's no side is immune from doing that.
No, and that was go ahead, Tim.
It used to be that we had the will sometimes to see things through, and I just can't help but remember when Captain Colin Gus, you know, they caught Jake with horse thieves. Man had to hang. There was just no way around it, right?
Yep.
He was a friend of y'all. We used to do that. And, of course, I'm joking. I know it's fiction and whatnot, although I love that book. But
I don't even know what I don't even know what the hell you were talking about.
Talking about Lonesome Dove.
Lonesome Dove, man.
Timmy, remember, those guys were man burners. That's why they hung them.
I don't read, like, girly romance novels.
Lonesome Dove is a classic.
Come on.
A classic Western.
But anyway,
you know, sometimes that kind of stuff needs to be done. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying I particularly want to do it myself, but somebody's got to.
Well, my point is this, is that the rest of the world rolls by those rules, right? The Chinese right now, right, have in concentration camps.
Yeah, Uyghurs. Yeah.
The Uyghurs, right?
Yeah.
And the world knows it. And in the world, what does the world have to say about it? Not a whole lot, right? Because if you take on China, China will try to bust it off in your ass economically. So if you're the Philippines and you're gonna be outraged over the treatment of the Uyghurs, what's gonna happen is, oh, sorry, that your exports to China this month just got canceled. So you deal with your unemployment, you deal with your economy, fuck off. That's how the Chinese do it. And so does any news organization want to take on China? No, you have Google running and doing their bidding, right? Everybody's afraid of them. And so that's the way the world runs. But in America, we do it different. So
there's a level of, there's a limit for what even like communist countries will put up with in regards to savagery. Like if you remember Pol Pot and those guys, and they took over in 75. Simultaneously with the North Vietnamese taking over South Vietnam.
Tell everybody who Pol Pot was.
Pol Pot was the Maoist communist leader of Cambodia after the government fell in April, May time frame in 1975. Actually, March, April time frame in 1975. And this guy, they were massacring people that were school teachers. They were massacring people who were dentists. Anybody who had any kind of higher education, they thought we need to purge these people out. And they were doing it. They were bludgeoning them to death. And so you eventually had somewhere between 1.5 and 3 million Cambodians murdered in like less than 4 or 5 years. And what stopped it was North Vietnamese, there were the Vietnamese, who had killed hundreds of thousands when they took over South Vietnam. And that triggered the whole boat people, you know, mass migration and coming to countries, you know, in Southeast Asia and also coming to the United States. But they were pretty brutal, but they're like appalled at what this guy Pol Pot was doing because it's so savage. It got to a point where there was no practical reason for it. It's kind of like the difference between Joe Stalin and Adolf Hitler. Both of them are huge mass murderers. Matter of fact, it's exactly like that. Both of them are huge mass murderers, but at least Stalin had some kind of practical logic to what he was doing, whereas Hitler was just purely racial in a lot of cases, most cases. So, you know, and then finally, you know, the thing can't be tolerated. Although I have to say, if someone's going to argue with me and say, hey, we didn't fight World War II because of what Hitler was doing to his, you know, doing to defenseless civilians, they'd be absolutely right. You know, but eventually there is a limit to what a neighboring country that has wherewithal will put up with, because that type of stuff can spread.
I don't know that I agree with that, because if it can spread, because the I can't remember if it was you guys that I was talking to in the last month, but we looked at, or if it was Musselman, but who are the largest killers on the planet in history? Number one is,
I'd say Genghis Khan, but I'm not sure.
Mao.
Yeah, Mao. Okay.
Mao number one, Stalin number two, right. And I think Hitler's like at four or five, right? And there were other people.
See how that could be.
Yeah.
I don't think they're giving Genghis Khan his due. I think they're undercounting there. Somebody's got their finger on a scale. But the thing with Pol Pot in Cambodia was they drove everybody out of the cities into the country to try to get into subsistence farming. They were starving because farming's hard. And it was starving people coming across the border that triggered the Vietnamese. They finally said, shit, we can't have
that. Yeah, you're right. You're right, Tim.
Yeah. Yeah. It was ridiculous what those guys were doing.
Oh, so it wasn't altruistic like Jeff was talking about a few minutes ago?
No, it never is. It's like, but that's what it is. Because that type of stuff triggers refugees.
Right.
And refugees are a pain in the ass, as we know.
See?
Yeah, countries don't operate on altruism. I mean, we pretend we operate on altruism, but that's not what we operate on. Come on, bro.
Only if it coincides with cold benefit to the to the country that does the interference, for sure.
Only if it's got some line item spending numbers that come along with it, then we'll get excited. Yeah,
I'm surprised you didn't say, Mac, when you guys are hey, why not go on a Bosnian massacre? Look what you guys did to the Indians. You say, yeah, but we kill most of the Indians just by giving them the common cold and the measles and shit. You guys are talking about shooting them.
We're much more discriminate relative to the way that we kill. Yeah. Here's an email. Tim and Jeff Hour. I'm starting a Tim and Jeff fan club. They should renegotiate their contract. Yeah, they should. They should renegotiate their contract.
Did Lori send that in?
No, it's not. First of all, she would not be a fan. Just for the record,
she is a highly critical listener. But
yeah, and you should only read emails that are bitching about us. Quite frankly, otherwise,
that was lauding you.
Not me. I'm an egomaniac. I don't want to hear bad about me. Only good.
Here's one. Hey, I'm curious, Mac. You went on a little bit of a rant yesterday relative to marine aviation and incidents that you've never seen in your lifetime that are happening, which you lay at the feet of the level of readiness that you blamed on previous marine commandants because they rode fixed-wing aviation too hard, using them as ISR platforms. I'm curious to what your friends think. All right, let me lay out the logical syllogism. I've never heard of an aircraft running into a refueler in my life, okay? Pretty basic event that aviators train for, and yet we had a midair over off the coast of Japan, and I'd never heard that in my lifetime. Yesterday or the day before, I don't know which date, here in the last few days, you had two Marine F-18s flying in formation, somehow or other collide in midair, but neither aircraft was damaged to the extent that they could not land.
Like, wow.
What? Yeah.
Yeah.
So my theory is this. We overused our fixed-wing assets and our rotary-wing assets in two wars. The F-35, shocker, wasn't delivered on time. Nobody would have thought that. And as a result, we had about 25 to 35% readiness in fixed-wing aviation for a period of time, which meant that pilots couldn't fly. So now you're trying to get them hours, and they simply don't have the repetitions not to do these things that I've never seen in my career. These kind of things happen, and so that was my comment. Either one of your thoughts, Jeff?
Well, another thing could be, well, you say not enough hours. That means the pilots aren't trained good enough. Yeah. And so it used to be, if you remember, in the old days of the 90s and stuff, that if you couldn't cut the mustard, very exacting standards, you didn't fly. And I don't know if it's that way anymore. I don't know if everybody's being judged by that same template. And I don't know if that's related to the fact that we're having a hard time recruiting people who do that, who can do that stuff. I just don't know. You know, I know that the wear and tear on the aircraft is a huge factor. I had my last assignment, I had a 53 just crash right there in LZ Vulture at Stone Bay by Camp Lejeune. And it was totally because of, worn out spare parts. So, I think they should, though, now, because the truth is the tempo slowed down, that they should be able to recoup.
Well, yeah, but the process of recouping means you've got to start flying, and you don't have the number of repetitions to have the savvy to do this stuff. I don't want to say on instinct, but, pilots will talk about, number of hours to be current, which is like 10, 11 a month, and then number to be proficient, which they would say is somewhere between 15 and 20, right?
I'll tell you, when you were talking the stuff about the Navy, about that ship, I think they're both of them, the stuff with the aircraft and the things with that ship are symptoms of the same problem,
Which is?
Well,
Which is a lot. I mean, the training's not being. I think they're just going through the motions of training. It's like when you work out. I mean, you can really push yourself and maintain an edge. You can just kind of dog it all the way through the workout. You might as well not even shown up. Right. But technically, you get a check. He did work out on this day, But so I just don't know if there's as much rigor, put to evaluating these people who are flying. I hope there is.
I'll tell you this. You talk about that refueling incident, and I do remember. I just recently watched this thing on Amazon called Thuds. The old what were the Thud aircraft? Old 105s.
Yeah, 105s to they're hitting anti-aircraft positions there in Ho Chi Minh Trail, Thud Ridge they call it. Yeah.
Yeah, and this one Thud pilot was re-tanking after hitting North Vietnam. They got hit with flak, which caused the seal to buckle, and he got enveloped in flame, and his wingman tells him, "You're on fire, punch." And so he's just talking about punching out, and this helicopter guy coming to get him. And then years later, when he's flying commercial, the guy next to him says, "Hey, what'd you fly?" And, I picked up this Thud guy. He goes, he was the only Thud pilot ever to have a problem refueling, only. So now you're talking Vietnam when these guys are flying their asses off. They're taking huge casualties in not exactly, a great aircraft. Yet they maintain standards. I mean, those problems weren't there then, and it wasn't like they had high morale with the Air Force guys flying out of Thailand because on those linebacker one and two offensives.
Yeah, you're right. Guys refusing to fly. Exactly. Yeah.
Goddamn. The president was telling the Swedes where they were going to bomb, and so they would tell the North Vietnamese, thinking they'd move civilians out of the way, and the North Vietnamese would do the exact opposite. They'd throw civilians in there and put in anti-aircraft, and the Fed pilots are like, "How come every time we fly over there, it's like it's the worst anti-aircraft fire in the world?" I'm way off a track, but I don't understand why we're having problems now. When even in the face of that bullshit, we could still find a manned aircraft and a hell of a lot more.
Well, I think the answer is relatively simple. They had enough reps, to be proficient. When you don't go to the field, when you don't practice your craft, and then somebody tosses you out there. My observation had to do with I've never seen these kind of incidents or rarely the refueling one. I've never seen that the midair between two F-18s flying close air support in 29 Palms. Like, are you kidding me? Kidding me? And so there was an accident a year ago or probably 2 years ago. It was a major by the name of Norton, and I, you know, friends of mine knew him, and he, on his last run, he drove the aircraft in the ground as he misjudged his altitude, and mm-hmm. and my friends were like, look, when experienced guys are making mistakes like that, that yeah. means they're not getting enough repetitions
right.
because they're better trained than that. And so, so my observation yesterday was, is this the cost? These kind of mistakes that we rarely, if ever, see, is that the cost of you know, our available aircraft going down to 25% here in the years previous and them not being able to fly? And now they're trying to, now they're flying, but they don't have the skill level, you know, and that, this is the byproduct.
Yeah, but look at the cost per hour to fly a damn F-35 compared to an F-4. I mean, we were arguing this stuff as captains back in the 90s, the difference between high-tech, complex airframes and airframes that could go slow enough to get some kind of ground orientation.
Right.
So that it's
yeah.
a little easier to talk. I mean, we were talking about that shit in the 90s.
And the one airplane they're trying to get rid of all the time, the Air Force, is the one yeah. that's the most valuable to people on the ground. That's the, you know, the A-10. And
right.
exactly, you know, the exact same thing. A lot of it is just like when you had a weapon system that wasn't that expensive and wasn't that technical, you could practice on it a lot.
Exactly.
And I'll tell you had guys who were like virtuosos at the 106 recoilless rifle and the 3.5 bazooka, you know, rocket launcher, mm-hmm. because it didn't cost that much to shoot it. When we switched over to wire-guided stuff, in your 4 years as a Marine, as an enlisted Marine, and you're an 0351, which for the uninitiated is a anti-tank, you know, rocket person, or 0352, you're lucky if you shoot one missile in your whole career, one real missile. You have a simulator. It's just not the same thing.
Right.
You know?
I remember shooting, I don't know, TOW or Dragon or someplace out at the basic school, and you had this crowd out there.
It was an event.
Right. Why is everybody out here? We only have four allotted for the year, sir. So we wanted to watch. Like, really? Yeah.
You better hit it. Now the pressure's on. Man.
You better hit it. Yeah.
Yeah.
How are you going to hit the? How are you going to hit the Hulk over behind the tree, sir? Yeah. I'm going to curve it. I'm going to drive it around to the right of the tree and then bring it back. Oh no, shit! You could do that. Yeah. Watch this. Poosh.
Well, you know, I told you guys about that PME that Ray Smith and John Ripley and Larry Livingston had for all of us when they were regimental commanders in Lejeune. And all that stuff came about, the first time all that stuff, like the wire-guided things, the fuel-air explosives, stuff like that, that all happened during the Easter Offensive. And the first time they destroyed a North Vietnamese tank with a TOW, the contractors, or this guy shows up and he's showing him how to do it. He shoots the thing, he hits a wire, and the rocket goes straight up, and the guy recovers it, brings it down, and knocks out a T-54.
Bullshit.
No, that's what he said.
Come
on. Because it was amazing.
You're supposed to start that one with, this is a no shitter, okay? You're supposed to at least be man enough to do that.
No. Hey, man, fuck you.
This is what
Ray Smith told me.
Wait,
he said.
So, wait a minute. So, it's wire guided and it hits it breaks a wire and it goes vertical.
No, it doesn't break the wire. It hits like a wire that was running across the I guess you call it the battlefield. It was right outside of what was the northernmost the northern place up there where the Dong Ha, I guess. Yeah, Dong Ha.
And the
guy recovered it and he hit the tank.
So hold on. It hits something, and it so the missile goes north. It goes up into the air.
Yeah.
Right? And then he recovers it.
It still attached the wire, and the guy recovered it enough so it could hit. Like that kid was telling you, I'm gonna use a wire, and I'm going to, you know, arch it around the this thing. I mean, I never heard of that. But I remember when you said that, it triggered in me another story about a guy recovering this thing and using the wire to actually guide it in.
So when you say recover it, you mean it went off course and then you brought it back on course and hit the tank?
Yes, yeah. That's what I'm talking about.
I don't believe it.
Do you remember the thing with the whole idea behind us putting heavy guns on Hummers along with the TOWs was the guy who's shooting the TOW had to be exposed the whole time that thing was flying, and it didn't fly that fast. Like if you shot from 1,000 meters away, it's like 8 seconds. You're there exposed, looking through the sight. And the idea was the 50 cal would at least suppress anybody who was going to shoot, because you didn't even have to hit the guy in the rock who's had the rocket. All you had to do is distract him enough to where the rocket would go off course,
right,
and maybe break loose from the wire and just be, you know, useless.
Right. Yeah, there's a pretty decent argument to be made about the Marine Corps not reacting quick enough to the missions and the lobbying efforts of the fixed wing community who wanted to fly combat sorties, right? And we burned up our F-18s.
Wow.
Flying ISR when we could have leased or purchased, right, Reapers, and had them on station longer with the same Hellfire platform and great cameras and all that. We didn't react to that fast enough, and as a result,
was this in like 2006, 2007? When was this?
For the whole time that, you know, Afghanistan, Iraq. I mean, they're up there, the F-18s, right, and every, you know, and I mean, and then the greatest asset that showed up in Afghanistan in 2010 was the Harvest Hawk, which is a ghettoized C-130 with this pod strapped to the back ramp and them shoving conventional ordnance out, right? And that thing, you know, being programmed, right, prior to getting shoved out with the grid coordinates, you know, or if we're going to make it a heat seeker, or whatever, however we're going to do it. But we
like an AC-130 gunship.
Here's another. Yeah, well, you know, the Marine Corps version, but it stayed up in the air forever. I want to say it was up in the air for 8 hours.
Oh yeah, C-130.
Yeah, AC on station 8 hours with like 27 Hellfires. Like, all right, send everybody else home because we got what we need. You know,
and those guys could actually see people.
Yes.
I mean, you know, they could actually see people moving around and stuff.
Right.
It goes back to what Tim was saying about. It's going slow enough so that it can hang for a while, you know, and, you know, and actually.
I mean, this is what Bill Lynn was bitching at the Marine Corps about for the last 50 fucking years. But it's amazing that, I mean, we're sitting here having a rational conversation. Everybody can follow along the advantages of said aircraft, yet we're buying F-35s. And this is what we put all of our future in, and it's bullshit, and we know it is because it's.
What do you mean? It's a fifth generation fighter.
Yeah, but the enemy doesn't even have any third generation fighters.
Exactly. Yeah, the third generation should be working fine, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
What about here's an email question. Last question, and our hour's over, boys. Mac. Do you and your friends believe that the F-35 will be the last manned air platform? I do. I believe that. They're too expensive. You can build them cheaper, make them just as lethal, and if they get blown up, who gives a shit?
Yeah, I mean,
see how hard it is to kill that off, though. You wait and see how hard it is to kill off that pilot community. Because, I mean, I don't think anybody could argue with you the facts on the ground. But you wait and see. They're clever bastards. They're going to figure out the reasons they got to have somebody up there.
No, you will need, for instance, because, right, so you can disable the whole drone fleet if you knock out the data link, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you're going to have some manned flights.
Like a KC-35
right,
kind of thing.
But you can regenerate, right, you can regenerate that data link on an F-35. You can designate one as the data link, and it's going to control six other aircraft.
Right.
So I think it will be the last. I think you will see more and more drone piloted, and then you don't have to protect the pilot inside of that. So it's going to be a cheaper platform. So that's what I think.
Yeah, it's, I do believe that the necessity for it is going way down. I mean, I think you'll always need helicopter pilots and stuff for a while, but. You know, but yeah, the fixed wing stuff. Do you want to piss off an air wing general? Is an F-18 guy say that? Say, hey, pretty soon.
Well,
sir,
they
know
it's true. It's too expensive, and it's right. You know, it's same thing with like, say, you know. Let me tell you the next one that's going to be go this way. Are those submarines that you have to mortgage the whole Navy to buy now?
Mm-hmm.
They're the next candidate. You know, if we do this times seven. you know. Right. And the problem is the boomers. We can't really put a nuke on a drone because if we lose the drone, like, who gets it? Like, now we got nukes on eBay, right?
Yes.
Abdul Mahmed, right, in Fresno, California, has a 7-kiloton nuclear device on eBay. Bid here. All right. Any final thoughts before I let you go, boys?
I hope you're feeling better now.
Yeah, you guys.
Yeah. Get another hour. Scratch that rash, buddy.
Remind me the next time I feel like that.
I hope we follow mine lotion you up pretty good.
The next time I feel like that, not to have you assholes on. All right, later.
You're out, boys.
There
good
you
talking.
Go.
All right, man.
That is Jeff Kenny and Tim Lynch. Not the greatest administrators of calamine lotion I've ever met. So, don't touch that dial. We'll see what Mike Musselman is doing next.
To be fully fit, you have to be physically fit. You also have to be mentally fit.
I wish that more warriors would realize how important it is if you get the psychological support that you need so that you can focus on the rest of your life.
I think it takes strength in order to admit that you have an issue. But it also takes intuitiveness of a friend, a leader, a supervisor to pick up on the signal that the soldier is having issues and needs to seek professional help in dealing with it.
It's also important for the lowest possible levels of leadership to be very supportive in helping their members get the help that they need.
When I went to get help, I had more help than I could ask for from my entire command.
It's sometimes challenging to come to a senior staff member or senior officer in the unit with a problem. There's not a commanding officer out there or a leadership staff out there that doesn't want to help. So don't hesitate. Come ask.
Learn more by visiting www.realwarriors.net or calling 1-866-966-1020.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com. And I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.